Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Today, I'm super excited because I'm joined by someone whose work I admire greatly. Mike Michalowicz is the author of a gazillion books, notably Profit First, Clockwork, The Pumpkin Plan, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, and a stack more. He is the founder of several startups which he's been able to exit from successfully, some to private equity, some to Fortune 500 companies. But most importantly, he's a business guy who really understands business. He's a Wall Street columnist in the past, and he's been on MSNBC as a business makeover specialist. His latest book is called Clockwork, and what I'm really keen to talk to you about today, Mike, is how to create time in the life of a busy entrepreneur. So firstly, welcome to our show.
Jesse, thank you so very much for inviting me. I appreciate this.
Yeah, look, it's as I said, it's something I've been looking forward to for a long, long time. And obviously, you're very experienced in the world of business, but I'm curious to understand, Profit First was a book that really changed and shaped people's thinking around actually making a profit, taking money from the business and supporting yourself. But it's really interesting because the two currencies, money and time, seem to be closely entwined. And I suspect Clockwork really addresses that second currency of time. Can you talk us through why that book was so important to be written?
I've come to believe that there's a hierarchy of needs for entrepreneurs similar to the hierarchy of needs for humans, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And the foundation, I think, from the entrepreneurial side is every business, regardless of what business you're in, needs sales. Because sales brings about the inflow of cash. And without that, I consider that the oxygen for a business. If you can't breathe, you will suffocate and die. The next level up is what you just said, profitability. And to me, that's the nourishment for a business. That's the food and water. Sadly, I see businesses that are starving to death, yet they're trying to sell more, which is the oxygen. They try to gasp for air, even though they actually need nourishment, which is profitability. Well, once a business has adequate sales and sustainable permanent profitability, then the next level up for the entrepreneur is time. And the time means freedom, the ability to do what they want, when they want, either in their business or in their lives. So Clockwork became this natural progression of a business that is making sales, is sustainably profitable. What the entrepreneur needs next is that freedom, time.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing because many of the listeners on this show are familiar with the premise of our show, which is to create a business and a life.
You're right.
And that life piece is often missing because we get consumed with delivery or sales or whatever it happens to be. And the $64 million question that I get asked regularly, and I assume you probably get a version of this question as well, is how do I know when to change gear? Because I'm stuck in delivery. I'm afraid that if I'm not delivering, in our case, dental services and other businesses, their particular product or service, how do I get off that treadmill to create the time?
Yeah, well, I think it starts off with a fallacy, a misunderstanding. At least this is what I believed for my own self. As I was growing my own businesses, I thought that I'd have to grind it out in my own business, work as hard as possible, and then one day, the business will run itself. I actually consider it a switch. I would be working in my business, and then one day, all of a sudden, I'd be working on my business. But the reality I've discovered is it's not a switch. It is a throttle. We slowly move into a position of working on the business, of what I call the design phase, where we're strategically working as opposed to the doing phase, which is actually executing the work. I also, there's a common phraseology that floats around that I think is a misnomer. So many entrepreneurs I've met say, my relationship with my business is a parent-child relationship. You know, I'm the parent. My business is an infant or a child. I need to feed this child. I need to support it. But one day, my business will get legs and fly the coop, and the business will be on its own, and that's when it's going to reward me. Well, I believe that now to be a horrible fallacy. It is not a parent-child relationship by any stretch of the imagination. What I think it is the relationship is that of conjoined twins. You see, my business and me are like this. We're locked in together. We share critical organs. We share the same legs, the same heart. And if I'm going to just rip it apart, both of us will die because there's such a codependency. When you remove, or when you disconnect, if you will, conjoined twins, it's a very careful surgical procedure. You do one step at a time. You don't make the surgery in one night. You disconnect. And over time, you fully disconnect all the critical organs. And then now the business can walk on its own. You will always share the same soul. That will never be divided, but you have to surgically remove yourself. The key is slowly but consistently throttling yourself out of the doing and onto the designing.
Yeah, I really resonate with that, Mike, because I think for some people, they try to do the cold turkey. And the analogy I have is that sometimes they're trying to run from first base to second base and they get stuck in the middle somewhere and they go, holy crap, I've got to go back to first base because it's what I know, it's what I'm comfortable with. And over there, it looks a little bit scary. So trying to do it all in one fell swoop leads to that, oh my God moment, how do I do this? And then I retreat back to what I know.
Right. And that's actually the challenge I see most often. The vast majority of businesses, and this is a global phenomenon, I think it's about 97% of businesses will never get past two or three employees because the owner says, this is too overwhelming. I can't manage these employees. They are idiots, you know, or some other derogatory term. I'm the genius. I have to go back to doing it myself. Then they do themselves. They get overwhelmed. I can't handle this workload. It is crushing me. I need to hire people. Shockingly, they hire idiots again and they fire those people. So they stay in this floundering between trying to do everything themselves and trying to hire a few people. The thing is, they don't understand the throttling process. They don't understand how to appropriately delegate work. These people are not idiots. The idiot is usually me, the entrepreneur. I haven't given them the proper structure to be successful. If we can get past that phase, we definitely position ourselves to get adequately to second base without reverting back to first.
Yeah, I really love that. And one of the things that I've come to believe as well is that the growth of a business, the rate limiting factor of any business really is the mindset and attitude and beliefs and structures that the owner puts in place, right? So before we get into the nitty gritty of actually what mechanics need to be in place, I wanted to ask you, what needs to be going on in the head of the or the mindset of the entrepreneur in order to be able to realize that actually it might be me that's the idiot and not them in the first place? So obviously there's a piece of self-awareness, but what sort of things should or have you noticed that entrepreneurs do think about as they successfully make that leap?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is to get in check with our ego. This was the biggest challenge I had. I really thought I was the smartest guy in the room. I really thought that I knew my business so intimately that no one could match my skill set. And when I had that mindset, was it Henry Ford who said, if you think you're right or wrong, either way you're right, or if you think you can or can't, either way you're right? I think that was the saying. Once I believe something to be true, it's so interesting how I find proof of it. And so I subconsciously wasn't training my employees effectively. I wasn't setting up to win. I was setting them up to prove myself right, that I'm the smartest guy in the room, and then would be disappointed in them. So first we have to get past our own ego. The second thing is to have this really, this true awakening. If we continue on this current path of trying to do everything, is this going to get us to our true objective where we have the life of what we define as freedom? Maybe it's financial freedom or freedom of time. Are we really going to get there if we continue this path? And I'll tell you, if you're in business for 5 years, that's usually the golden number, and things haven't changed, that is adequate enough time for radical change. But if things are the same after a five-year period, the issue is us, the entrepreneur. We need to make a shift, first in our mind and then in execution, to get different results. Because if we're staying stuck in a pattern for 5 years, that will carry us to the end of our life. And if we're not happy today and after 5 years, we ain't going to be happy at the end of our life.
Yeah, and it's exactly right. Because one of the things that, if that shift doesn't occur, right, the growth goes up and up and up and up, and then it typically plateaus. And you hit the edge of that business model, which is the superstar entrepreneur with a couple of people around them, revolving door of people. But then as things plateau, my observation, of course, is that becomes initially a plateau that you can sustain, but after a while that becomes tiring. So you plateau it a little lower, then a little lower again. And ultimately the business slowly declines over time. So if you don't make that shift, really we're setting it up for a declining business in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is time is a... it cannot be replenished, right? Time is the only resource that I can think of that will never come back. Once it's expired. Yet how many entrepreneurs try to scale their business is through more effort, the consumption of more time per day. If I work harder, if I grind harder, my business will grow. And that is true, but only to this plateau, as you explained. I can work so hard, and then I hit this level where even I can't work harder. There's not enough time left. And I start oscillating here. I get a little bit tired and the business slows down. And some owners will do exactly what you said. They hire two or three employees. And what's interesting about this phase is they're still the exclusive mind for the business. They're just task rabbiting everyone else. They say, go do this, go do that. And they're kind of assigning out time or tasks to other people, but they're managing it all in their head. I found for businesses, you can get to maybe $1 million, at least US, of revenue by doing this kind of task rabbiting and manic way of running your business. It's a very rare circumstance that that type of entrepreneur can up-level their business much further without moving on to a more sophisticated or more mature level of running your business, which is the true delegation of outcomes. Instead of task rabbiting, say, you go do this, you go do that. I say, hey, here's the goal we're looking to achieve. This is the outcome we need. Get us there. Follow the path that you decide is most appropriate, but we need to get here and start delegating outcomes. That's the key to this next level of growth.
Okay. So again, let's talk about delegation of outcomes, because for some business owners, they might not be particularly clear about an outcome. I guess clarity is going to be key, because if you're going to be delegating someone else to do something, you've got to tell them exactly what that outcome is. So in terms of your experience in delegating outcomes, how has that worked on a practical level, apart from saying, you know, hey, Bob, this is what we want to achieve, go do it? Is it, hey, Bob, this is what we want to achieve, can you build some intellectual property assets as we're going on this journey so we can create the systems as we go? Are we building the bike as we ride it, or have we got that in place up front and early?
Yeah, so we have to start with the end in mind. So we got to reverse engineer our business. I myself have applied this. So I think one thing that's unique about being an author like I am, I also own businesses, is I actually test these hypotheses on my own business and see if they work. And then if they do, I then document them. And what I do in my own business is I first define what we're looking to achieve on the grand scale. So my mission, my company's mission, is to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty. That's how we've defined it. This struggle that entrepreneurs have that no one really knows is going on. The outsiders think we're all millionaires and we don't work, when the opposite is true. We are usually as poor as church mice and we're working our butts off. So I want to eradicate that reality. Well, how do we eradicate entrepreneurship? Well, we have different vehicles, products that support that. My books, speaking, educational platforms, training, and so forth. Well, under that, we talk about each of these vehicles and how do we deliver on that at an exceptional level that we've defined. I then meet with my colleagues and say, listen, the outcome, for example, for a training, we want to have a training session where the entrepreneur is moved forward, meaning that when they leave that training session, they come with a specific outcome that has advanced their business. We want them to feel embraced, because the biggest challenge many entrepreneurs have is a sense of loneliness, actually. They don't feel that they're part of a community, so they need to feel embraced. So we define the emotions they need to experience, because that deliverable actually typically is an emotion. I then say to my colleagues, what path do you think will get us there? What else do you want to think we want these people to feel? So it's now a collaborative effort in achieving the outcome. We're defining the outcome, and collaboratively, we're defining the things that will get us there. When they collaborate on this, they have a sense of ownership, because they're the ones who devise the plan. I then say, okay. And I also say, listen, the plan may change as we go along. I am empowering you, and there's a special way of doing that, empowering you to make that outcome a reality. Now, here's the key to empowerment. Empowerment means that when they make a decision, you have to support the decision, even, and this is the key, even if the decision is a bad decision. And this is where many entrepreneurs fail. When an employee makes a decision and it fails to come true, the entrepreneur reprimands the employee. That was a mistake. Never do that again. I'll dock your pay. I'll fire you, or whatever version is. But we reprimand the employee, which then makes them fearful and makes them say, well, I'm never going to make a decision again. I'll make the boss decide and I'll just do what I'm told to do. Which is the worst thing, because you go back to this phase of just controlling all the rabbits, the task rabbiting. The key is this: when an employee makes a decision and it fails to achieve the goals, we support the decision. We say, listen, I know we didn't achieve the goals we wanted. I'm just proud that you made a decision that you felt was in our best interest. Go back out there, do it again. I support you. And here's the reality: as entrepreneurs, we mess up all the time. And do we fire ourselves? Never. In world history, I don't know a single entrepreneur who's fired themselves. We allow mistakes to happen. We get back on our feet and we push forward. That's what we need to do for our colleagues.
Yeah, I sometimes laugh because I sometimes think that most of the entrepreneurs probably would have fired themselves if they'd been someone else in their business, right?
It's true. They could have. They couldn't fire themselves.
Yeah, exactly. If someone had made the mistakes in my business, I'd probably be going, oh, yeah, get out.
Yeah, it's true.
But I have made all those mistakes and more. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about team because obviously getting that team structure is going to be critical, mission critical to executing on the plan, enabling and empowering decision-making. So how do you create a balanced team in the sense that you might have different skill sets, different attributes and so on? How do you get that right mix of, I suppose, what you need to move the team forward? And then how do you manage and lead that team?
I'll tell you the way not to do it that I've discovered, that I've been doing for the longest time. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, that was a mistake. Is I did it based upon titles. Like I said, I need a receptionist. I need a salesperson. The problem with this is I have a predefined role or responsibility for what I define a receptionist. Great on the phone, highly communicative, great at data entry to track information, great physical presentation. They got to look the part. And I realize it's really hard to find that person. My salesperson maybe has to be really persuasive on the phone, but they're, and I have some other defined roles. What I realized is I may have a person that's fantastic on the phone, but doesn't make a good personal presentation. But guess what? They'd be great for the phone component of reception work. And they actually may be great at some of the sales componentry, the early phase of sales. So what I need to do, now I do, is I look at each individual person I have on my team and say, what is their inherent talents? Leverage their talents. Have them do what they're extraordinary at and concentrate their efforts there. Don't do it in a specific title. Do it across the entire business where they can apply their talents. So I no longer have a receptionist. I have someone that's great at phone presentations. They do some of my sales, the early stage. They do some of our reception, and they do some of our customer service now. I have another person that presents themselves greatly. They're just such a charismatic person. When you meet them face-to-face, you fall in love with them. Well, guess what? They handle the introduction. When someone walks to our office, you actually meet them first, not my receptionist. You meet the great charismatic person. When we have customer service and outbound networking events, that's the person that's going. So identify the strengths, the talents of your people, and match up all the different responsibilities you have in your organization to their talents. It's unbelievable what you can accomplish with a small team that's exploiting talents as opposed to a large team that's stuck within a certain title.
Mike, that is absolute gold. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have just tuned into our podcast, we are listening to best-selling author Mike Michalowicz. Head across to his website, mikemichalowicz.com, because there is an absolute treasure trove of goodies there, lots of resources. And before you do that, what I'd like you to do right now is hit pause and go back and listen to about the last 45 seconds of Mike's presentation there, because it is absolute gold. And I really resonate with that, Mike, because it feels like we're shifting away from the traditional hierarchical organizational chart where you've got dentist, receptionist, dental assistants in our industry, but in other industries it might be very hierarchical as well. And as you say, we're using people's skills and talents and we're blending roles in a sense, or taking a bit of this role and a bit of that role, because it's outcome focused, right? As opposed to just having a position description where we go, your job, Mike, is to do A, B, and C. Now you might be good at A, B, and C, you know, not so good at. But now let's find someone who can do B and C, and you just do A because you're great at A.
Exactly. And this is true for us too. Like, we have to be just as critical in our evaluation of ourselves. You could be a dentist that's phenomenal at the actual art of dentistry, doing the work, or you could be such a rapport builder that people have confidence and comfort. Well, if that's your ability, find someone else to do the technical work, but be the face for it. Oversee the patient so they're so comfortable, and then the work gets done. Conversely, maybe you don't have the traditional doctor's kind of presentation, which can be kind of flat. That's okay, but we need now someone to be the face and deliver that comfort. So the mistake entrepreneurs make, business owners make, is they think they're great at everything. The reason is when you start a business, you have to do everything. But trust me, I am not great at everything. I'm great at a very few things, and I need to concentrate my effort there. And this is true for every business owner. The things that you can do are not necessarily the things you're great at. Focus on what you're great at, and that will elevate your business tremendously.
Okay. So again, really resonate with that. Can I just throw a little curveball towards you? Because I know
lay it on me.
Someone's going to be driving along in their car, listening to this podcast and going, yeah, but Mike, what you don't understand is I've tried that and I get sucked back into it. And
every time
I get pulled back into it, it's like the Death Star. I get sucked back into the Death Star. How is it that you break the gravitational pull of the Death Star and, you know, continue on that journey, and so that you actually make that step and commit to it? And equally, what other common challenges do you see entrepreneurs making as they make that leap?
Yeah, the way to break from that Death Star is small wins. This is something I discovered when I wrote my prior book, Profit First. I taught this entire system about profitability and said, this will make your business permanently profitable, I assure you. And people got excited and they did it. And then shortly after, it failed and they went right back to their old ways. I'm like, what happened? And they said, it was just too much. I was overwhelmed. Therefore, profit first, that system doesn't work. I'm like, oh my gosh. The problem is that the system doesn't work. The problem is that they, for their first practice session in preparing for a marathon, the very first day, they ran a marathon. They injured themselves. And they said, therefore, you can never run a marathon. The same thing is with this clockworking of business. If you want to run on automatic, if you start with this mass delegation, it is bound to fail because it's too abrupt of a shift. So we want to actually get these small wins. That's the key. So the first thing we delegate is not all the stuff you're doing, but maybe there's that one nagging task. Like maybe you do the insurance claims. Sadly, that's a very popular activity with dentists here in the US. They are constantly sitting in the back room doing insurance claims. It consumes a huge amount of time. It's frustrating. And it really doesn't move the business forward, but it gets money in the door. Maybe just delegate insurance claims. Now, you can't hire a full-time employee to do that. Maybe it's an hour of work every day, but there are definitely people out there that'll do it. Or maybe it can be a virtual assistant. Just do that and nothing else. Leave everything else in the business the same. What will happen once that is truly delegated, meaning that person that I'm managing the outcome of successfully processing these claims, you'll feel a little bit of relief and say, oh my gosh, this actually works. The goal of this now is to give you the confidence to try the next thing. I don't know what it is, but you'll find the next thing. Get someone doing that and build the confidence. This transition may take months or even years, but if you slowly and consistently give away small portions, you'll build the muscle and strength to ultimately delegate it all and have the business run on automatic. Slow, small wins is the key.
Yeah, again, I really resonate with that. The sport that I really follow here, Mike, is a game called cricket. Not so big in your country, but I'll give you an analogy. Cricket is one of those games. I don't know if you have you ever watched a game of cricket?
So I have a quick cricket story. So not here in the US, I was touring Australia and I had 3 days off during my tour and there was a cricket game. So I said, I'm going to immerse myself in cricket. Well, baseball here takes about 3 hours. I didn't realize a cricket game can go for 3 days. But the worst part is it ended in a tie. I couldn't believe it. I invested 3 days of my life and I'm like, it's a draw? What is this? Yeah. So that's my cricket
story.
Yeah,
no, and that happens with frequency for sure. So the thing with cricket is if you want to build an innings in cricket, it's to give you a baseball, it'd be like trying to hit a home run every single time, right? And so if you go into the cricket pitch and you're trying to hit a four or a six every single time, the likelihood is you're going to get out. And so you've got to build an innings on ones and twos, you know, those small little wins that you talk about, and accumulate those wins and then take that win and put it in your pocket, learn from it, and then set yourself up for the next little win and, again, cycle that through over and over. So that's my cricket story for you, mate. Next time,
I know, it's a great analogy, and that's the absolute truth.
Yeah, and next time you're out here, let me know. I'll take you to a cricket game.
I would like that. I would like that because I was on my own. And so there's this American among thousands of Australians. And I'm just clueless. I also watch Australian rules rugby.
Australian rules football? Yeah. AFL. Aussie rules?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Aussie rules. Yeah. Awesome. That was so that's a tough sport.
It's not for the faint-hearted. It's not for the faint-hearted. But no. That's really cool. So definitely we'll catch up and do that. But I want to just cycle back to Profit First because you mentioned that. And Profit First, for the listeners to our show and members of our community, will know that Profit First is on our recommended reading list. It's a wonderful book. And we really salute you for writing. And I think it was a much-needed book.
Thank you.
What I really like about Profit First is it takes that concept of pay yourself first, which we've known about for a long time, but not many people do. And entrepreneurs, business owners, I think are some of the worst at doing that.
True. Very true.
So Mike, since you wrote that book, there's been a mass movement around understanding the importance of cash flow and cash as the oxygen that keeps the business alive, which you spoke about earlier. And I know we're kind of descending the hierarchy of needs at the moment, but there'll be some people listening to this show who are going, I get the get off the tools bit, I get the time bit, but I just need to get some oxygen.
I need money.
I need to make this sucker go. So I wanted to ask you, from your perspective, what have been, I guess, the fundamental lessons and the key things about implementing profit first in a structured way. You said bit by bit, small wins along the way. But for people who've got the book, I just want to give them a few little ideas about how to make the most of that resource.
Oh, totally. So the key lesson is in the title itself, that our profit has to come first. Now, here's the greatest irony. For ever since the invention of accounting, profit has been the last consideration. It's the bottom line, after all, or the year end. We give it that exact vernacular. If you look at it, profit and loss statement, the turnover's up top and it goes all the way down. The very last thing is the profit. Well, it's human nature. When something comes last, it means it's insignificant. Like if I say, you know, I'm going to put my health last or my relationship last, I'm saying I don't care about it. But when I say I'm going to put my relationship first or I'm going to put my health first, that's when it becomes a priority. But in the formula, we're told that income, sales, and expenses come first and profit comes last. So most businesses, what do they experience? They are panicked about sales, the very first item, and they're panicked about paying all those bills, the second item up top. Then profit, they wait till the end of the year, and if there's no profit, they say, well, oh, maybe next year. So we literally delay profit for a full year before considering it again. What I'm suggesting, the core principle, is flip the formula. It's now income, revenue, minus profit equals expenses. What I'm saying is take a predetermined percentage of your income, allocate it toward profit, literally transfer that money to another bank account, hide it from yourself, then run your business off the remainder. What this does is first it assures profitability because you've taken it already, it's hidden away. It also tells you what you can really run your business off of. When we spend every penny we have, that's not what the business was designed for. That income has to serve multiple purposes. Has to pay profit. Your salary as the owner of the business, your tax liabilities. Like, listen, I've yet to be to a country, and Australia is included, that the government doesn't like to stick their long hand into our business and suck money out. And you guys forgot that you have GST over there. Like, what was that? Like,
tell me about it.
Yeah, you're getting slapped left and right. But listen, this is also our legal responsibility. We have to pay it. So our business is going to reserve those responsibilities prior to giving us the last chunk of money, which is expenses. That is what the business is really designed to run off of. And we have a responsibility to make our business run off that. I'm not saying this is going to be easy, but it's the reality. If you want to be profitable, if you want to pay yourself, if you're going to comply with law and pay your taxes, your business must run off that remainder.
Yeah, and so I really resonate with that as well, Mike, because what we're effectively saying is what's left over the expenses, we've got to learn and become adept at running our business off that amount of money. And that requires some creativity. It requires some ingenuity. It requires prioritization. It requires all of those skills. And what I really, again, really love about this book is it's beginning with the end in mind. And it's same with Clockwork. So for me, I feel like those two systems really could be running in tandem, side by side with one another, so that you've got profitability from the get-go, and you're gradually building this business that runs like clockwork by gradual delegation, empowering the team. And so when you're doing one step here and another step on that one, it feels like together the profitability is increasing, but we're also building up our ability to create that time as well. And yes, it's a throttling process. I understand that. But to me, it feels like these two books are written hand in glove. Was it?
Yeah. That was the intention.
Yeah. So I love the fact that you're tackling both issues in two books. This was fabulous. So again, Mike, just I know that as we get to our conversation, people are going to want to head across to your website, mikemikalowicz.com. As they go around that website, I've had a good look through that website. And firstly, I feel like I've cyberstalked you through your website for a little while now, and it feels a bit creepy just saying that on the podcast. But I guess if there was a resource or a section of your website that you would direct people to up front, where would you suggest starting? What's a good starting point?
Well, I'll give you a shortcut also to get there. I know my last name is nearly impossible to spell, so you can go to mikemotorbike.com. That was my nickname in high school.
Mike Motorbike.
Yeah. Here's the irony. I've never driven a motorcycle in my entire life.
Well, that was what I was going
to
ask you.
I was Mike Motorbike. If you go there, it'll bring you to my site. So that's the shortcut. I suggest it'd be nice if you sign up. You don't feel obligated. But the reason it's nice to sign up is I used to write for the Wall Street Journal. Many of my thoughts that haven't become books yet, I first wrote articles about, some of them years ago, and they're in the Wall Street Journal archives, but you can get them for free by signing up. If you decide not to sign up, I get it too. You can then go to the resources page. Everything's listed there. Now, I also have a podcast and I have a blog, but I don't want to overwhelm people. The resource page has instant access to all these different downloads that support these concepts we've been talking about.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you so much. Hey, Mike, you've been incredibly generous with your time today. Not only generous with your time, but generous with your wisdom, your insights, and generous in taking the time to write books. As someone who's, I feel a little inadequate. I've only written one, and I know, hard and how much work goes into writing a book. And you've got a whole bookshelf of stuff behind you there, which
right, strategically positioned. Yeah,
no, but yeah. It's wonderful, and I know how much effort and work goes into that. And I just want to let you know from all of us here, we think it's valuable work that you're doing. It's important work that you're doing. It's essential work that you're doing. And please continue it, because we all love the stuff that you're doing. So thank you.
Jesse, thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on our show, Mike.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.